Hello and welcome. This week we're taking a little break from our regular episodes to celebrate the conclusion of Book 1. Instead, we have two bonus episodes out today. You're listening to our Book 1 retrospective, and be sure not to miss our other episode for today, in which we play through a short little spin-off episode starring Onyx. And now, on with the show! Hello and welcome. This is Clement Todd, your Dungeon Master on our adventure through the world spire. I have with me Nancy Chia.
Hey, I'm Nancy and I play Tinsy, but you can call me the Little Lightbearer.
And I also have with me Tessa Lemaire.
I play Zealous. Nothing's coming to mind as a quick, quirky little comment, so I'm just going to stick
Snacks?
With that. Snacks? Snacks?
And Annie Clark.
Hi, I'm Annie. I play Feral, and fun fact, I'm actually a snake in real life.
Nice. That explains a lot.
Yeah.
All slimy. Scaly.
All snakes are slimy. Judging much?
If you missed it in the outro for our previous episode, this week's episode is just going to be a bit of a retrospective on our first story arc, which has just concluded. Just to give us a little bit of a break, a little more time to get ready for the next leg of our journey.
Woo! Exciting!
Legs!
Ooh, the butterflies are in my tummy and they're angry.
Is it because you ate them?
Yes.
More snacks.
Snacks!
The first thing I want to get into in our sort of discussion is, so has the campaign been everything you guys hoped it would be so far?
Made me cry.
Same. I am
so yes.
Yes. I am still mad that Lorelai left. I know you said she's coming back, but I swear to God, if she doesn't, I'm gonna cry some more and Zealous will be very angry. And Zealous is inner me, so I will be angrier.
She will go Hulk angry now.
Where does Tessa start? And Zealous and
Tessa,
it's getting increasingly harder to tell.
At like 5'4", and then the rest is Zealous.
That explains a lot.
And so, unless I'm mistaken, like none of us had really played D&D before this point, right?
No,
not even for a moment. Never owned my own set of dice until we had to have a set of dice.
Yeah.
Until you had to.
Yes, so begrudgingly.
Flashback to all the time you and Tessa spent talking on the group chat, like, oh my god, I ordered these really pretty ones.
Yes, the dice fever has definitely set in.
100%.
Yeah, I've already found like 7 I won. I mean, another one, not 7. I don't need an intervention. Let's continue.
And then, so as far as prior experience is concerned, I know that Nancy and Tessa, you both had never played any like tabletop RPGs at all.
Nope.
And then, even for Annie and me, our experience was very limited. Before this, we had only really played like 4 sessions, not of Dungeons and Dragons, but of the Dragon Age tabletop RPG.
Yeah. I remember my character. Her name was Margarita.
Yeah.
She was, what was her class? I can't remember. Was she a ranger?
She was a rogue.
A rogue,
so in Dragon Age, there's only the 3 classes. There's warrior, rogue, and mage. And then there's a lot of variety within those classes. But
she had a dagger and, ooh, what are those little spiky shields called? I can't remember.
A buckler?
A buckler that she would smash people in the face with.
Yeah.
And, she was secretly running away from her past life as an assassin. She used blood magic to change her appearance and everything. It was very dramatic.
Yeah.
Except we never got that far.
Yeah, it's one thing that I'm so happy about with like the World Spire is that like everyone in this group is really committed to continuing to play, and you guys all engage with the story really, really well. Like, you guys all make me so happy as a dungeon master because it's so rewarding to play for you guys.
Well, you're stuck with me now. Like an incurable disease, I will always be with you, and if you ever try to leave me and this campaign, I will follow you. I will.
Oh, you'll just hear the rattling of her dice everywhere you go.
Yeah.
It's not uncomfortable.
I'm kind of turned on. Oh. I'm just grateful to watch the, like, lights change on your face. And the lights to go out of your eyes.
But yeah, just like with the World Spire, like our Dragon Age campaign, I had like a bunch of grand designs and big plot twists and stuff that I was planning. But as I understand, many campaigns fall victim to just scheduling conflicts ended up just sucking the soul right out of it. And it just like, I think the last session we played, I just sort of like gave up halfway through.
Yeah, it's really sad.
Yeah.
And how sad are your friends that could not get the scheduling down with you guys?
Well, they were really busy.
Well, I'm not saying, like, they're bad people. I'm just saying they must be really sad that they can continue.
Yeah, seriously.
They're so pathetic. Listen to the podcast, you know?
Like, I mean, I'm a good person. But, like, you know, it must be, like, to know that and not have a chance to experience it. That must be really, that must really suck. Because I can't imagine playing the first couple of sessions and then not getting to the point where we're at.
Yeah.
Because
it's
been so amazing.
There's so many mysteries that we still have to uncover and that sort of thing. I'm so excited.
Yay. But
especially for the two of you who haven't played any RPGs at all, like, how does it compare to what you were expecting it to be like?
For me, it's so much better than I expected. I'm not going to lie. Like, I had faith in all of you for, like, a good campaign. But I also I thought that I would be greatly disappointed because I didn't think it could be this fun and this, like, that I could be this invested in this entire thing. And I remember
you're making me feel all warm and fuzzy.
Well, I remember when me and you were talking about my character, Zealous, I was like, this is going to be good. Like, this is going to be good. And after the first, like, time we played, I was like, holy cow. Like, oh my god, like, this is gonna be insane, like, and I freaking cried, like, this is, this doesn't happen, I don't understand it.
Welcome to D&D, all of your mascara must be waterproof.
That's the problem.
But, like, all three of you have been so amazing for, like, when we're not recording, just, like, you know, I'll just be, like, messaging you privately, and, like, we're just, like, you all have been really good for helping me build the excitement and, like, really, like, because, you know, as a dungeon master, you want to have, like, you want to tailor your campaign to whatever the players want. Like, you guys seem to be really into, like, the sort of narrative and mystery and everything. Actually, this week we just started a D&D campaign at work, which I finally get to be a player in.
Yay!
Yay!
But turns out it's, and this is not a complaint at all, but it's a very different type style of Dungeon Master from me. It is not a narrative-focused campaign at all. It's it's a lot more kind of open world and exploration-focused. And god damn, is he a brutal DM. Like, two of us died in the first session.
Oh, no!
The rest of us barely made it back to town alive. Like, oh my god. And there wasn't a single NPC in the whole thing. Like, it was all just, like, exploration and discovery and that sort of thing. So, like, it's another, like, totally valid, really interesting way to play the game. But I like running it with a narrative.
I'll say, Tinsy, if you were not malevolent, would have definitely died. I don't know. My experience with this, I think it helps that I have a lot of history playing a lot of different types of video games.
Yeah.
RPGs, FPSs, all of that, puzzles, and all that kind of stuff that I was expecting, like, the fantasy and the excitement. What I wasn't expecting, and this is going to sound mean, but it's not meant to be mean, just how absolutely amazing and memorable your storytelling is.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Like, I knew you're creative, and I knew... Like, you know, you're with your background in theater and all that kind of stuff. Like, I knew this, but I didn't expect to just be so drawn in as much as I am or was or whatever. You have me all tongue twisted because I didn't expect to fall in love with the world itself. Like, I knew I was going to be like, really, this is going to be so much fun. This is going to be amazing. With your background, I knew it was going to be really, like, well done. I just didn't think I would be emotionally attached to the things that are in the world itself, and really rooting for everybody and, like, really hating certain people.
Yeah.
And really just, like, I don't know. I just wasn't expecting to feel so amazingly part of the world. Like, I honestly think about it, I'm like, oh, yeah, in an alternative universe, that shit is real, and I am Tinsy. Like,
yeah.
I just didn't expect that, and I really love it. It's like everything my little nerdy heart wanted when I played, like, RPG games.
You guys have been so good for role-playing, and, like, really, like, there's been a few moments where, like, especially when I'm role-playing Lorelei, like, where I just, I'm not even, like, really thinking about the rest of the things, I'm just, like, having a conversation with you guys' characters, and that feels so good. But yeah, oh my god, you guys, it's gonna be hard to run this episode because I'm blushing so much.
All the blood went to your cheeks.
Yeah, I was legit but, just gonna say that.
We love our DM.
Yes. Yeah.
Yay.
DM appreciation day. Yeah.
Have a Timbit.
But how about you, Annie? Like, how does the campaign compare to your expectations?
I am somebody who, I don't know, I'm very kind of like hands-off-ish when it comes to this kind of thing. Maybe it's the background in theater. I am like terrified of jumping into roleplay and fucking it all up.
Right.
So I just kind of like went along with everything rather than really like delving into the background of the character, and you were okay with that.
Yeah.
You weren't just like, come on, you gotta do something. You just let me figure it out as I went, which I super appreciate.
Yeah, no, I like, that's just it. Like, there's like, I think that a good dungeon master has to design the campaign around their players and like sort of figure out what they're expecting from the experience and what they want for their characters and for the story and that sort of thing, and try to accommodate that in some way. And I think that especially with the conflict being centered around Crescent Valley, it's kind of worked out well for that, because like Feral had a very good reason to be, you know, not her usual self at this point, and it sort of gave us a little extra time to figure out who her usual self really is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In the first chapter, I think I didn't really know what to expect either at this point. Like, you know, I was playing with you guys, apart from Annie, who was in my Dragon Age campaign, but I was playing with this group for the first time. So, you know, like, I had been building this world and this narrative and, like, these characters and everything, and just being like, I hope that this is what they want out of the experience. And I think that, like, you guys also, like, far surpassed my expectations.
Aww,
yeah, like, you guys have been such a fun group to play with, and I'm so excited that we have so much more of this campaign to go through.
Yes.
If it ended, like, after, like, I would cry.
Same.
Yeah.
It would be, like, that situation where, like, Supernatural would, like, demand more, and then to the point where it would just be terrible.
Yeah.
Just, like, thinking about it ending anytime soon or even in the future gets me emotional. I'm like, I don't want this to end ever. I want this feeling to stay forever. Like, oh.
I mean, everything must come to an end.
Yeah.
I know that.
Hopefully that's, like, you know, a couple of years later.
Yeah.
At least
our children will have you as their DM.
Oh, yeah. That would be amazing. I would love to run a campaign for kids.
It should be like a bad mom campaign, too. Like, the evil people are the moms. And the kids have to try to escape like, go on their own adventure, but the moms won't let them.
Yes.
Shit, guys. There needs to be a mama, like, a mom. Dungeons and Dragons. Okay, continue.
But I think for future campaigns that we do after the World Spire, I think I will probably try to make them shorter, like, in the long-term plan. But I think right now I'm living out my fantasy of just having a huge, like, lore-heavy, epic, like, long story. Like, this is something I've just always wanted, so I just want to dive in and do it, you know?
Right there with you.
That was something I was thinking was somehow it wasn't like a lot of the other campaigns that I've listened to. There wasn't like a single like pub scene. There wasn't a single dungeon to crawl through.
We did pass out and wake up in prison though.
We did pass out and wake up in prison. That's like pretty standard.
Yeah.
But like,
admittedly, that has been in both campaigns I've run, waking up in a prison. the Dragon Age campaign actually started like that.
Yeah.
But
some real high fantasy shit, guys.
Oh shoot, what was I gonna say?
Sorry, I just wanted to say that.
No.
It was very different from what I thought. I don't know. Yeah. I was just imagining like cookie cutter fantasy thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The caves that you traveled through were sort of like a dungeon, but they weren't like filled with treasures for you to find or anything like
Mostly
that.
Because we just love that sidesteps yes. literally everything that.
Yes, we will get to that.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Just before we move on, just to give you a little context of how far we are through the story, is that I've been sort of planning it around what level you guys are at. I want to play all the way until you guys are at level 20. And the way that we're doing leveling up in this campaign, rather than using experience points, is up until level 10, we're doing two level ups per story arc, with an additional two levels that happened at the end of episode one when everybody like had their prophetic visions and that sort of thing. You guys jumped from level one to level three at that point.
Okay.
But then after the fight against Shepherd Lothurin, and then again just now after the Battle of Crescent Valley, you guys have gained another couple levels. So when we resume next time, you guys will be level five. Each story arc for the next little while, you're going to level up twice until you're level 10, and then you'll be leveling up at the end of each story arc after that point.
You mean like one level?
Yes, exactly. Okay. So basically the level 10 and onwards will be the bulk of the campaign.
Ooh. Yeah. Ooh, I'm so excited.
Tinsy's so excited.
And yeah, sort of like my timeline of the story, I've plotted out like with your character levels. So
let's not die.
Yeah, so please don't die.
Nothing.
Oh, and I've said this to the three of you before, but for the listeners at home who are perhaps thinking that I'm like perhaps a little too nice to them every now and then, the way that I'm sort of approaching danger and potential death in this campaign is the characters can die. Like, I legitimately do not want them to, but if they do something real stupid, or like, you know, or if a combat encounter just really goes it goes more south than I expect it to, they can absolutely die. Like, sometimes the best option is to run away from a fight. And I have put some time into figuring out what I will do if any of your characters die.
Is my request going to be, I put in a request, not like a physical paper, but like verbally, I wrote it out on a beautiful parchment and had it in and submitted a request of what would happen if Tinsy died. Is it part of it? Can I share?
You can share it. I'll cut it out if I don't, because I don't remember.
I want to be the gray squirrel. I want my character to take over the gray squirrel's character.
As long as you're okay not being able to do anything in combat.
Hey, I'm supposed to... if I took over the gray squirrel, I think we talked about me being a bard. And I'm going to get an acorn and cut it up so I can play on it.
Well, you know what? I am very willing to be accommodating. So hopefully Tinsy doesn't die because I fucking love her. But yeah. We shall see.
Can I be a zombie?
I think that's the last thing Feral would want, but I mean, she is the avatar of the rot.
No, she is the rot.
Yeah, she is the rot. Get it right.
I'm a zombie snake. I'm a zombie snake.
One thing that you guys have asked me about a number of times, but I wanted to save for now, is things that could have happened if
things
had gone differently.
I'm so excited.
I'm so excited.
So, chapter one was pretty linear up until the ending, and there were, like, three or four different ways that it could have ended, most of which were relatively similar to one another, and I'll have to rack my brains a little bit to remember some of those, but the most significantly different ending that could have happened was that if the Assassin Prince had seen you guys, and you guys managed to still jump, he was going to chase you, and Zeke would have jumped off right after him and, tried to tackle him. In this particular ending, Zeke actually would have lived.
Tinsy, do you guys remember what you did to Tinsy at the end of the fucking... Oh my god, I was so angry. You, Tessa, Zealous... like, wanted to punch me and knock me out. You shoved your robe in Tinsy's mouth. And the whole time she's crying. crying, and you guys were just like, oh, let's just kick her and, like, shove stuff in her. Like, upset.
I'm upset as well, but if Azealis would not have met Lorelai if that didn't happen, then I would be even more upset.
Well, maybe you would have had a brother-in-law.
Well, yeah, I mean, brother-in-law, mother-in-law, like...
We'll get to Lorelai soon, but she would have existed regardless of whether or not Zeke died. But that was the only ending where Zeke would have lived.
I'm so angry.
yes. Not just at the ending of this particular episode, but also throughout chapter 2, which was the next few episodes, there was absolutely the possibility for you guys to be caught and thrown in the dungeons of the Arakocra. That would have significantly changed how the first arc played out. Like, I can't reveal too much of what would have happened there, just because there's, during your escape from the dungeon, there were going to be some characters who you guys still haven't met yet.
Ooh. Juicy! Yeah. Juicy!
Without any details, because they would be spoilers, there would have been a completely different way for you guys to get to Crescent Valley, and the story would be in a very different place now than it is. But perhaps in a future retrospective, once you've met more of these characters and that sort of thing, perhaps we can get a little deeper into details of what would have happened in the first story arc.
Let's go deeper into the arc.
Woo!
I have a question.
What's up?
At what point were you like in that beginning, like, listen, when we like woke up in the prison or whatever, at what point were you like, oh, this is going completely different than what I expected? Or like, oh, they just did something that like, oh, this was not on the table of like possibilities.
Yeah. Chapter 2, like episodes, I guess 2 through 5, that session was definitely the one where you guys threw me for a loop the most. There were two major points. The first one being the way you guys interacted with Deputy Lear was not at all what I was expecting. I basically just thought you would take his deal and get out of prison. And, like, Deputy Lear was just supposed to be there for, like, 10 minutes. And he ended up occupying, like, an episode and a half.
He seems so sleazy. He needed to know more.
Because, you know, in my head, he's just like, you know, like, sure, he's like a deputy and he works like in this part of town, but that's it. He's just like kind of a creepy cop.
Yeah, I mean, we learned that after an episode and a half.
But like, but you guys immediately were just like, he's got to be, like, in on this somehow. Yeah. Like, how does he connect to the plot? I'm like, he doesn't!
I remember very, like, specifically, Zealous was right away like, yeah, okay, let's take it. If we had left it up to Zealous, we would have bypassed all of that.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm so glad you guys did, because, like, we got to, like, sort of explore a side of this character that, like, I had to make up a lot more of it than I was expecting to, just on the spot. And then you guys, like, kidnap him and Binkley and take him to Binkley's house. And, like...
Binkley's Tinsy's fault. She went back for the kid.
I mean... So bad. Yeah.
Oh my god, I felt guilty after.
This poor fucking kid.
And, like Binkley, like, was basically just supposed to be, like, the brunt of a joke, like, where, like, you know, Deputy Lear just blames everything on him, and, like, he never even speaks, really. But here you are going to his house.
Threatening him.
And, like...
getting hot water.
Yeah. He gets into the house, and he's just like, Mommy!
Oh, yeah! That, like, destroyed my heart. I was like, aw, this is a bad idea. He just kidnapped a child.
Was he there on, like, an internship?
Yeah, basically. But basically, like, you get to his house, and I'm just like, I'm not making his mom be there. I'm not fucking, like, making up three characters on the spot right now.
I actually have a question, thinking of that, for you, DM. Yeah. Was there something that any of us did that frustrated the hell out of you, and you just wanted to, like, slap us? That just, like, it just bugged you so much.
Was it the Leer?
No, I mean, like, I think the whole thing with Deputy Leer, I was not frustrated at all. I think, mm-hmm. but I think I was afraid. Because, like, for the first time, I'm realizing, like, oh, shit, these guys can really fuck with my plans. And there was definitely a point where I called a break, and I just sat on the washroom, like, what happens next? Oh, God.
Use those breaks wisely.
Oh, my God, they're really stupid. Oh, no.
And they can hear us talking, in here, there's gotta be something he knows. There's gotta be.
Yeah. And, I mean, you guys did get some, like, world information out of him, so, like, so...
If any of us remembered, who knows?
Yeah, I think it was a win in the long run. Like, you figured out from him, like, who the talents of Deep Sky were. Things like that.
We did.
Which is really important, and that came up very important at the end of the session. And towards the beginning of the next session when you guys met Lorelei, which, speaking of which, the next time you guys really threw me for a loop was when Titsy started burning people in Savage and Plateau.
You're welcome.
Yeah, no, that whole scene did not go down at all like I expected it to. I think I've told you guys this before, but I was not planning to have Lorelei, like, be a character until at least the second story arc. Like, she wasn't going to be introduced until much later in the story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's going to have the big reveal of her being Zeke's sister, like after you met her, like, assuming you guys eventually make your ways to the Talons of Deep Sky, like, that was where you were going to meet her. But you...
plans change!
Yeah, do they ever. I'm so happy that you guys met her early, though, because she has been my favorite NPC to play so far. Like, I did not expect anyone to make it to the stage while there was anyone important still there. but both Feral and Tinsy did.
Yeah.
Feral tickled the Lord High Necromancer.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder how he tasted.
And then, Tinsy,
fire.
Fought with Lorelei over Zeke's body.
Okay, well, is what I comment. I remember when I was like, I want to set people on fire. And I remember asking many questions of, so, like, the people that cheered, they're still here? Like, the people that didn't, are they still here?
Yeah.
Did they leave? Because I didn't want to set anyone else on fire. But I remember you were like, okay, well, how are you going to do this? And I was like, I have torches. But secondly, I mean, I feel kind of bad that I wrestled with the sister of the dead guy, but Tinsy is super paranoid. She's not, she just doesn't live around people and humans, and this one guy that she was very, like, she was so touched by how brave he was by trying to do something when he was so weird and funny, but he would try to help and be good, and Tinsy's all about goodness, that she just didn't trust this person. Like, you know, she couldn't trust this random person there. Like, she can't trust everybody.
Yeah.
And so, like, what if it was a lie to get Zeke's body and she's going to stab me? I don't know.
And, feel like the Oath of Vengeance was also so fresh in her mind at that point that she just, like, kind of snapped.
Yes, because, like, one of the things with Tinsy, too, is... when I was reading the different oaths with vengeance, I feel like I kind of like how the vengeance doesn't quite match with, like, the way I think Tinsy is, but she's becoming it a lot more, where it's like the oath of vengeance, it's like, you know how the whole saying, like, it, like, you know, I don't even know what the fucking saying is correctly. The ends
justify the means.
Thank you. The ends justify the means. I think that's almost a lot more of what she was like. She just needs to get to Zeke's body.
Yeah.
That's all she needed to do. She just needed to get to Zeke's body, get him away. So whoever this person was, who I just watched standing there, just shocked, and then as I was going on stage, still standing there while people are burning, I'm like, this lady's a weirdo. you know, it didn't matter as long as it got to Zeke, and I think that was probably my favorite scene, but also a very shameful scene when I think about how I probably shouldn't wrestle with the dead dude's sister.
But, like, going forward, like, one thing that like, surprised me is, like, how naturally, like, all three of you had what I feel like were very touching moments with Lorelai. Like, all three of you independently did. And I think that's a big part of what makes her my favorite NPC, is that she's, like, really connected to, like, all of you. And she sort of, like, connects you guys in a way to the world in a narrative sense.
I think so, too. Mm-hmm. I also like that it wasn't, like, all at once. Like, that trust and that connection built differently and for different situations and for reasons. Like, I knew the moment when the whole, like, Mighty Mobsters happened and I talked about, like, why I was in debt, and she was the one that came and, like, comforted me first before you fools came. And, like, I grabbed her hand and we admittedly were like, yeah, we didn't really meet in the best circumstances. I trust her. I like, mm-hmm. in my head, not me, but Tinsy was like, yeah, this is a good person.
Yeah.
And a good person that's worth my trust. So then going forward, when, like, Feral was like, and Zeolus is like, I'll just kill her. And then Tinsy was already in the stage of, like, I don't have to worry about that because I don't think she would.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really do like how quickly Zeolus went from, we should kill her, to, like, maybe I want
have my babies.
Teach true how love.
To kegel.
Just like.
Kegel? Yeah, kegel.
Okay.
You know, true love, you know, sometimes it just takes the wheel, goes by quickly, and that trust is just established, and it goes from there, and.
Yeah. You're just lucky you didn't kill them first.
I'm very happy I didn't kill her first.
Yeah. But, like, the next chapter after chapter two, like, I'm very happy that we had a chapter that had a bit more levity in it. Like, because, like, I don't want a campaign that takes itself too seriously, mm-hmm. you know. So I think that, you know, chapter three, right in the middle of our first story arc, like, reminding us that, like, yes, we should, you know, still be silly and funny, like, have the fucking sheep rebellion.
Oh, that was so good.
And the Mighty Mobsters, originally the Cutesy Cutters.
I still prefer Cutesy Cutters.
Yeah. Actually, they were still going to be called the Cutesy Cutters, but then, like, I just realized, like, sort of, like, on the same day that we played that session, just, like, you know, like, when someone says a cutter, they're usually referring to someone who cuts themselves, so I probably don't want to, like, these talking about how cute these cutters are constantly.
You know what? Brand changes happen all the time.
Yep.
Yeah.
They gotta keep the times. So if they can't grow and adapt, they're not gonna last. And clearly they've lasted.
Maybe mm-hmm. then you would have had to come up with these, like, cutesy edgelords. Perhaps.
Is that all what Tinsy is? Internally she's an edgelord.
Well, I know that Knife Nose is very pleased with himself for coming up with the name Mighty Mobsters, so let's let him have this one.
Wait, Knife Nose was very pleased?
Yeah, he's very pleased.
I mean, like, past tense, because he's dead.
Oh my god, I love how paranoid we are with everything he says.
He's fine. Like the end of a Marvel movie, there's the little white text that says, Knife Nose will return.
Yeah.
But yeah.
He'll ride in on a cloud sheep.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yes. There have been a few points throughout the campaign so far where I have secretly rolled to see whether or not, like, you guys would notice something, like, rolling against your passive perception. Mm-hmm. And the one time you noticed was during chapter two. But the thing is they rolled too well. So your characters didn't see what it was, but you guys all noticed that I rolled the dice.
Yes, I do remember that. Like,
we all, like, freaked out. All what just happened? What'd you write? Why'd you roll?
Yeah,
but as soon as you guys fell into town, Viscera detected your presence. Like, she has a network to detect anyone who owes her money. and the Mighty Mobsters were following you the entire time.
They saw me burn people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Knife Nose complimented you for that.
He did. I was not happy that he did. Like, it was a desperate measure. That's all.
Yet, one thing I probably shouldn't have done as a DM is, like, after you noticed me, Eddie, you asked me to do a perception roll. I probably shouldn't have let you because you technically had already failed it. But I did anyway.
And I appreciate that. I had one of those feelings, like one of those chills go through.
Yeah.
It was your snake senses.
My snake senses. Yeah. My tongue. Tessie's like, yeah.
Senses.
But one thing that's been fun about sort of going through this, like, as a very new DM, is sort of, like, I've definitely been learning as I've been going, and I think figuring out how to run the sessions better, and, like, even more so how to, like, make it fun for you guys. And one of the biggest things that I'm happy about sort of figuring out as we go is how to make the sessions a little more open-ended. And I feel like after you guys got out of the city and started climbing the mountains, that's where that started really to click for me. Because, during the whole Ascent Through the Wild chapter, there were so many things that could have happened. And it was, like, largely based on your roles. And then sort of figuring out how to do that a bit more, I think, enabled me in the last chapter that we just played to make a lot of those variable things more dependent on your choices. Because, especially chapter 4, like, you guys just rolled in such a way that you happened not to fight anything until the owlbears. Which,
we're so good at that.
And even the owlbears, you only fought because Zelus scared off their protection.
Yeah.
Thank you, Zelus.
Yeah, which I was very grateful for, because otherwise the session would have ended earlier than I wanted it to.
And I mean, Zelus kind of sort of didn't, but kind of got some action, so it's like, it's perfect.
It was worth it all, man.
She puked up in her own scarf, right?
Yeah, don't you put it in your mouth. I'm going to say, actually, as you've grown, I think we've all grown as well.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the first episode, the first recording, it started off with me, and you warned me, and I still was like, what? Oh, God. And just kind of just threw myself in it.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's become a lot more natural as well.
Yeah.
And a lot more understanding. And I think it took a while to get the difference between what Tinsy would do versus what I would want to do.
Right.
And learning to do that separately.
Yeah.
And working together, not as Nancy, Annie, and Tessa, but as Tinsy, Farrell, and Zelus, working together with the different personalities. Like, the beginning part where Tinsy was just so on Zelus, trying to be friends, I think is very much Tinsy.
Yeah.
And not me. I would be like, oh, she's too scary, man. But I feel like that partnership between the three of them.
Yeah.
Like, it took me a while to, like, understand that and how to work together, so.
I think I've experienced the same thing, too. I'm not sure, like, what moment in the campaign I started feeling that way, but, like, definitely at least in the last couple of chapters that we've played, I have felt as though, like, you know, I'm engaging with Tinsy, Zelus, and Feral rather than, like, the three of you, which is what you want. Yeah, I've been really thrilled about that. Would you guys like to know some of the things you could have run into in the mountains?
Yes. Just before that, I do want to say I love that this one here, Zelus, is a lot more comfortable growling and roaring for us.
Yeah. Yeah, I think because so far every chapter and every episode, including this one, Tessa has been recording remotely from us because she's in university. But for chapter 4, The Ascent Through the Wild, we were able for the first time to play with the full group here in person, which I think really, like, I think that was probably really the moment where we started really clicking as a group. And I was thrilled to see that that carried on even when we did play remotely again. But, like, yeah, definitely the difference in chapter 3 and chapter 4 in Zelus, like, really getting into character is like night and day. Like, which, again, I think, just like with Feral, having sort of the crisis, allowing Annie to take time figuring out who she is as a character. I think that it makes sense for Zelus's character to take that time to open up too, because, as we've alluded to, on occasions, like, she's lived basically completely by herself her entire life. So figuring out you know, how to be comfortable around this group that she's traveling with for the first time. It totally makes sense that once she's finally back in her element and traveling through the wild, that's when she starts really, you know, feeling comfortable around everyone.
And as it opened, as you became more open with us, so was we more aware of just how dumb Zealous is.
That was the best part for me, was figuring out that Zealous was not as cool as we thought she was.
I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense as to why she would. Like, she doesn't have any education. Like, she doesn't know how to read. Like, she doesn't know anything. Like, how is she supposed to, like, know what to eat and what not to eat? Like, the only way she figures that out is by eating it, and then she'll know.
How's she supposed to know that mushrooms aren't meat?
Oh my god, that was what I love. There was an actual silence between the two of us of just, did you think that was meat?
I really enjoyed the part where we all screamed at each other for 2 minutes.
Yes. Yeah. After the dragon.
Oh yeah. God, that was so funny.
That was so good.
Throughout chapter 4, most of the points where things could have gone drastically differently were based on whether or not you got critical fails.
Oh.
And you guys, like, did not critically fail. Like,
yeah, it's a difference.
Surprising.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
especially during the leg of the journey where you guys were traveling up the underside of the first mountain, there was a lot of danger of falling there. Like, especially as you got, like, sort of closer up towards the peak. If you guys had critically failed on, I think it was the navigation check, you would have ended up going through an area where the rot had, like, really destroyed a lot of the roots underneath the foliage you were climbing on.
Destroying the roots, Annie.
God damn it, stop it, Annie. No.
Yeah, stop it.
What are you talking about?
And if you guys had gone that way, there would have been a dexterity saving throw, and anybody who, and it had a pretty high DC as well. And anybody who failed that would have, like, been holding onto a root that, like, slipped and fell down, and it would have, like, sort of unraveled and pulled, like a mile or so of roots out. And that was one of several ways that you guys could have fallen off of the mountain. But Lorelei had feather fall, so that was my my backup plan, so as not to kill you off your characters.
Because it just pushed us back a couple of days.
Yeah, well, and that would have been a huge hindrance, like, too. And sort of going back to my philosophy on handling, like, the probability of you guys dying, I never really want a character death. Like, I really don't want a character death to come down to, like, the luck of, like, a single roll or a couple rolls. So, like, not to make you less scared or anything, but, like, if there's a really dire situation where you feel like it could kill you off very easily if you just roll too low, that I usually have a way to save you, but there's, like, serious story consequences. Like, I would rather, like, because I love your characters, you guys love your characters. I think a lot of people listen to the show because, like, the characters are so likable. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, as much as I'm willing to let them die, I don't want it. And so, to me, I think having a serious impact on the story is a much more interesting consequence to something going really bad. And what could have happened there if you guys fell off the mountain would be Lorelei would have jumped after whoever and used Featherfall on herself and on you. And there was a good chance that the rest of the climbing up the mountains would have had a split party.
Continue.
Especially once you guys got towards the top of that first mountain, if you guys tried to just climb up again from where you were, like, it would have been too slow. Like, you probably would have been forced to take the highway where there are a lot more Aarakocra.
The beetles?
Yeah.
You love the beetles!
Oh, sorry, no, the beetles aren't on the highway, because the Royal Aarakocra updraft is, like, this huge fumarole of wind that goes upwards, so there are other highways that do use beetles and other wall-climbing steeds. But
I just really like the idea of like beetles, these massive fucking beetles.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
You want to eat when you're a snake.
Yeah.
But yes, and part of me is kind of sad that we didn't get to see a version of you guys getting to Crescent Valley, where we were cutting back and forth between the group climbing through the mountains and the group like sneaking up the highway and trying to avoid detection. But I'm also glad that none of you died. So, yeah.
That would have been
and there
bad.
Were lots of monsters. There was a nest of sturges, which are these sort of like blood-sucking vampiric creatures that you could have disturbed.
Oh, no.
There was a banshee that you guys.
Oh, I would love to fight a banshee.
Same.
Oh, guys.
That sounds terrible.
My bloodthirsty little heart is so sad. I have to say, I think it is honestly that whole arc in that story of just the cave, and then the way you had did it a little bit more based off of like the role for the day. What are we deciding? I think that was probably. Like, one of my most favorite moments.
Yeah.
Because we got to work together and to strategize together and decide who's going to do what. And I feel like we took it seriously enough.
Yeah.
But we still had a lot of fun with it. And I love that, like, I felt like that's when, you know, it really bloomed between Lorelai and Zelis.
Yes.
When she was teaching her. And that's, I mean, we know, I feel like that was the moment. That there were hearts in their eyes.
Yeah. No, I really like how naturally that relationship came about, because, like, originally when I was playing that chapter, this was a scrapped idea, but originally I was thinking of having Lorelai be attracted to Zelis, and then I cut that. And then it just happened anyway.
Yes!
Your hands on her boobies. Yes! I healed her through my touch.
But, and the reason I cut it is that, like, you know, like, I don't want to sort of, like, impose relationships upon any of your characters, like, unless it's, like, something that you guys have discussed with me previously, but, like, we didn't have to discuss it previously, and I didn't have to impose anything on you, like, it just worked out, and, like, that was the biggest unplanned thing of this whole campaign so far, and it's like one of my favorite parts of the story.
Love should never be planned.
Yeah.
Yeah. It worked out so perfectly.
Depends where it depends the culture you're part of.
Yeah. True.
I really thought you guys were gonna fight the dragons. Like
I kind of don't want them to die.
The dragons?
I don't know. I love them. They're great.
Zelis
hates them.
Very much. I did want to, but then Tinsy didn't want to in the beginning, but she definitely wanted to after she noticed they were bullying Zelis. And she definitely wanted to.
Oh my god. My heart and Zelis's heart just fluttered. That's so cute.
I only have a couple more questions for you before we get into our little micro session. But the first one being, how did the attack on Crescent Valley, the way it played out, how did that compare to what you were expecting the whole time leading up to it?
I think the day of, we all were pretty much expecting everyone to die.
Yeah.
Like, at the very beginning of the episode, you're like, are you ready? We're all like, no.
Yeah.
I am really blown away that somehow everyone got out and none of us fucked up to the point where things went really bad.
Yeah.
Things kind of went bad for Tinsy.
Yeah.
But I was fully expecting this to go much worse. Like, I was expecting lots of casualties, especially Sylvia, who was, like, really busy hugging her tree husband. But then Zelis just, like, chucked her over her shoulder and, like, ran away with her.
Yeah, you told me afterwards that you weren't planning for her to be anyone.
It's not that I was planning. Well, I mean, I was, but I wasn't planning to kill her off. Like, I knew that for any one person there was a possibility that they would live or die. Even, like, the Juniper Witch. Like,
don't say, you take that back.
That's what I mean.
You take that back out of the universe.
But that's what I mean, though. Just anybody could have died, and you guys saved everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Parallel universe theory, there are some universes in which she's actually dead.
There's universes in which you're all actually dead.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Sorry, this is supposed to be friendly. hate you. Tessa, actually, I have a question for you.
Yeah, totally.
I know you play some video games.
Yes.
Right? But not a whole lot. Mm-hmm. So for myself, strategizing and playing that kind of game is like, oh, I love it. Mm-hmm. But for yourself, how did you feel about it? Like having to like work together with us and then this situation of like both protecting and like prepping for the actual defense and all that kind of stuff.
I really enjoyed it. So like a lot of the games that I play, the one major one that I used to play was Uncharted, specifically multiplayer, and where you're alone, you don't have a team. Like it's really just like basically you against everybody and you have to protect yourself and like all that type of stuff. So it was kind of nice to be able to be like, oh, phew, like it's not just like, I don't have to do everything, you know, like I don't have to worry about everybody, like all the like hundreds of people that are there and like all of that. So I found it so much better and like a lot less stressful, even though it was very stressful. Cause I remember every time that it came to like my turn, I was always like, but this has to be done, this, this, this. And I'm like, wait, there's other people. So there's other people. It's fine. So yeah, that's how I felt about it.
One of the joys of tabletop games.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I honestly, I'm gonna be very honest. I was expecting us to get there and everyone would already be dead. Like I thought it was gonna be like a dark ass twist where we walk in and even though we thought we had all the time right, the timing we were actually wrong. And I thought it was gonna be some weird ass shit like way back where we thought we were like, you know, when we got into prison, but it actually like an extra day had passed. And we were literally just behind the attack. And I thought it was gonna be a situation like that.
That was a potential ending for the arc.
Yeah, I mean if we fell off the mountain, definitely.
Well sure, but like even if you guys like had shown up, I'm trying to think what it was, just a day or two later. Mm-hmm. Like even if you had showed up a little later but still before the original window of time, like the attack was actually going to happen a little earlier than you thought it was going to. So you guys got there really fast and it's a damn good thing you did.
Yeah, I'm so glad that we decided to just go full speed.
Yeah.
No, it you guys made the right choices the whole way through and I'm very proud of you all.
Yay!
You saved all my hippie friends.
Thanks,
Dad. Like Steve. Yay.
Oh, I love Steve.
Steve is amazing.
How were you imagining the plot? Like, because obviously you guys didn't think that it was going to be the Order of Orgalad doing the attack.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what in your head was going to happen there?
Well, I didn't think you were going to bring my dead family into this, so rude. I actually thought that the Aircraca would be there, and I thought that would be, like, a situation where we stand off, but we're not meant to, like, we weren't meant to, like, win.
Right.
And it would be a situation where we were, like, we had to lose people to get away, and I thought it was going to be something like that. Like, I thought it would be I didn't think at all that my dead family would be involved. I thought maybe they would be more involved in a sense of like
motivation.
Yeah, kind of. Like I thought it would be more like, you know, I thought it'd be more like the revenge of Tinsy, like of any movie. But like I thought that would be more of what they played rather than actually being part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And like at most I thought it would be like, oh, like they had a secret that they never told her, which clearly they did. But like I didn't think it was going to be part of that. I did not think deeper into what Tinsy's past could be part of it. So I thought a lot of it was going to be heavily on Annie, actually, on Pharaoh, mm-hmm. and her story and how, like, her family and what was happening there. So I didn't expect stories from, like, really backgrounds of myself or even, like, Zealous to be part of it as fully as it was.
Yeah.
Like, even meeting Onyx and Thunder of the Storm and all that kind of stuff. I didn't expect any of that. So I honestly thought this first, like, the first, I guess, arc would really be heavily Pharaoh.
Yeah.
And it turned out not to be. So that was really cool.
For the attack on Crescent Valley, I actually somewhere have a secret Google Doc that's just writing out like all of the events that led up to that, starting from like 75 years ago or something like that.
Damn,
he spends a lot of time on this.
Yeah, and I think that more details of that will come out in the story, so I won't say too much. But yeah, and the last thing I want to ask before we get into our little mini session is, do you guys have any, like, lore or plot predictions going forward?
Honestly, I used to. Now I don't.
Same.
How about you, Tessa?
I'm trying to think. And I'm kind of like, I don't know what I should, like, or shouldn't say because of, like, future and my character and everything. So I think I'm gonna... I'm not... Nothing concrete.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll just keep it up.
The one that I was really sitting on is trying to figure out our fucking titles. Yeah. Like, that's the one that I have gone through a billion different ideas, and I still can't figure it out. Like, trying to think that the rot, maybe the rot was a good thing, and there was a reason to it, but I'm like, but how? And then, like, I just, and then the Dawn of the Storm, like, is there, like, a whole world other than what we have here? Like, what is going on? It turned into a really bad conspiracy theory session. I sat by myself in the dark. So I stopped. And I just let it all go.
Your sister tapped on the door like, hey, Nancy, you okay in there? And you're just sitting in the
middle. Nothing's of the okay!
Like, just silently staring at her like, yeah, I'm fine. Everything's dark.
Don't worry about it.
Your hair is, like, all in front of your face. You're just on the floor.
All by myself.
All right, well.
May I have a question?
Yes, please.
For everybody?
Yes, yes, questions for you guys to me.
For everybody here, what, naming one, was one of your favorite moments?
Oof. Oh God, there's so many.
I have
good
a clear
moments.
One.
Yeah.
Like I really, like I really do love the romance between Lorelai and Salus. I feel like that is such a highlight of the series to me. And the whole like escape from Saffirjay Plateau was like a really fun dramatic moment as well. Like with Zelus like fighting the guards and the rest of you like trying to make off with Zeke's body before anyone can stop you. Because between the two sessions, because like I said, Lorelai wasn't planned to be a major character until later on, so I hadn't finished fleshing her out yet. So as soon as I revealed that she was a sister, and I was just like, and that's where we'll leave off for tonight. And then like the next like month or so until we play it again, I'm just like scrambling to flesh her out some more.
Let me think. I really love the moments in the cave systems where we find out that Zelus isn't the smartest. Eating spiders and then
snacks. You mean
snacks? And she like vomiting into her own scarf is really great. Really, really good. Great stuff there.
I might change my choice.
But honestly, I don't know if it feels like a little bit of a cop out because it happened so recently. But the way you opened up the last chapter with the flashback, it felt very much like a show. Like that's how they would end, like start the last episode in a season, would be to go back and pull that bit of information out and make everything feel that much more intense and potentially doomy.
Yeah. No, actually, that's a good point, because, like, I answered the question thinking more of, like, which moments that, like, came about was I, like, most impressed by. Mm-hmm. But, like, I think out of all the stuff that, like, I personally created, I think that's probably, that is definitely the moment in the series that I'm the most proud of so far. Mm-hmm. And Eddie will attest to the fact that I spent, like, a week and a half just, like, obsessively writing the music for that part.
Yeah. Ooh.
I heard
also,
you cried.
Yeah.
I kept crying, especially at the part, like, where, like, Udawain was convincing Tinsy to run.
I cried.
Oh,
you
God.
Made me cry.
You're welcome.
I cry every time.
Yeah. But, like, yeah, no, I've still been, like, just listening to the music, like, constantly, even though I wrote it.
What about the part where you made Tessa and Nancy swap dice?
Oh, yeah.
Right,
that was
a good
so
moment.
Fucking funny to me.
Yeah, because again, like, like Tessa, that was like the one time so far that she's been able to play with us in person, so I was just like, I am not missing this opportunity.
Yeah, no,
to
you
have
definitely
her incredible roles be swapped with Tinsy's terrible roles.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Jesus.
Was that your favorite moment? Or one of your favorite moments?
Definitely not my favorite moment.
You sure?
I'm 100% sure. I have a few favorite moments because I like them all for different reasons. So I agree with, like, the cave. Like, I found that such, like, a it was a moment that I feel like everybody, we were kind of seeing different sides of a little bit of everybody and kind of just like,
yeah,
there was a lot happening that was a lot more intimate, I found, for all of the characters together, which I really, really enjoyed that entire like scene and like, I just loved that in general. Personally, for like my specific character, the kiss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Perfection.
And how about you, Nancy?
So I'm surprised you guys didn't say this. One of my first favorite moments was when we had to jump over the fissure and we all fucking failed.
Yeah, that was really good.
Oh, yeah, that was good. That was the moment when I was like, oh, we all dumb. Yeah. We are all dumb. But yeah, that was one of my favorite moments. I guess more recently, like 100% on, like, I agree with you guys. To add to that, I mean, not that I'm like, ooh, me, but I do love the moment when Tinsy does go, I'm a paladin too.
Yes.
And I think that's something very...
I tried to emphasize that part in the music. I don't know if you noticed.
I noticed.
Yeah.
Let's be real, I cried throughout the whole thing. Let's do it again. But actually, a really favorite part in all of that is afterwards when I'm confronted with Ashwin and everything, or Tinsy's confronted with Ashwin, and I reach up and hold Feyre's hand.
Yes. Yeah.
And that was actually, I think that most recently is one of my top favorites.
Yeah, I agree.
That just that moment of Tinsy reaching over just because she was so scared and so sad and she just needed to hold a hand of someone she like trusted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just remember listening to it again and just hearing of I reach up and hold Feral's hand, or Tinsy reaches up and hold Feral's hand, and then Feral's reaction of like, jumping because she's surprised, and just me going, do you hold back? And it was just a very serious question of, do you hold back? And you're just like, yes. And it was just a moment there that I thought was really beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What if I'd said no?
If you said no, I would have been so angry at you. But if you did say no, I don't know. I mean, it would have been a whole other thing.
Like, that's one thing I really
you
do.
You would have waited for the podcast to end, and then you would have beat me up after.
100%. I'm not denying it.
That's one thing I really love about playing with you guys is that, like, you know, you guys do goof off, and that's great, because otherwise this would be the most boring fucking podcast ever produced. But, like, you guys are in character enough to know, like, when to dial that back and, like, to have nice, sincere moments like that. And I find that it creates a... like, you guys have really matched the tone of the story that I wanted to tell. And, like, if anything, you have enhanced that tone and, like really refined it and made it...
Enhanced.
But, like, you've taken the story that I wanted to tell, and like, you know, not the other day, but like a while ago, I was like really thinking back on the story and thinking about how much more it is because of you guys than it would have been if it was just the story that I was coming up with. Yeah. So I'm like really, really grateful for you guys. It's like earlier I was asking you guys what your past experience with tabletop games is, and ever since I was in high school, like, I have wanted to play Dungeons & Dragons, and I've just never been able to find a group. And, like, I could not possibly have found a better group than you guys.
I have tears in my eyes. You're rude. Rude. Every freaking episode lately.
I'm going to repeat the first thing I said before. You made me cry.
God damn it.
No. But I can understand that, because when I was in high school, I really wanted to play Dungeons & Dragons, but none of the guys that played would let me, because I was a girl.
Yeah.
And so I kind of, like, killed that part of my life. And then when it kind of resurfaced again, I was female, a little bit older, and I got mocked about wanting to play that again, because it was such a, oh, it's such a kid thing, when 100% not.
It turns out you are amazing at it, so.
Yeah. How is it such a kid thing when there's the whole stereotype of the bard fucks anything with a pulse?
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing, like, you know what helps a lot? I would just like to toot our own horns and say we're not players that want to fuck up. the storyline because we're invested in the storyline in the world.
Yeah, nobody. So that's one thing I love about this group. None of you are trying to screw with me.
Yeah, none of us are like lazy, chaotic neutrals.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like you're not trying to have sex with everything. You're not trying. You're not murder hobos. Like
he's eating everything, Zealous.
Like the
murder hobos. Sorry.
Oh my God. But like you guys aren't murder hobos. Like the closest we came is you burning people. But like you did have you had a legitimate in character reason.
I did.
Like you guys like aren't like trying to push me to see how far you have to go to break the story or anything. Like you guys want the story to be good, and you guys want to be a part of it, and that really means a lot to me.
Oh. Why are you trying to make me cry again?
Well, I mean, it's just that I feel like this is something I have really needed in my life for a long time, and I'm just really happy that I got to do it with you guys.
Samesies. Oh, you guys. My emotions stop.
You know, it's funny. When we started just podcasting in general with this one and with SLT, like, Tessa... We've always joked how she's like cold hearted, that she doesn't feel, that like the few times her heart beat was really like foreign and strange.
Yeah, but she's probably had the most emotional connections to this.
Like to like just everything that we're doing, like we've seen her cry, we've seen her rage, we've seen her embarrassed.
Yeah, like a lot of the time
we've seen her fall in love.
It's like as a DM it's so satisfying when like your players like have a big reaction to like the plot beats that you've been planning out or like things like that, and like yeah, Tessa, you've been so great for like gasping or like crying at things, and like like this whole group has been just been so like so satisfying to play for, you know. Yeah,
I just in regards to Tessa and Annie, one of my most favorite things with the last bit that we've been doing was when during the whole reveal and like confrontation with Ashwin and all that kind of stuff, I love that we all reacted very similarly. Yes. Like we echoed each other and like, what the fuck? Oh my God. Yeah. Like, yeah. It just continued on that we just all were so invested. Even when it was just like Tinsy and Ashwin, I felt like it was just like, I felt like it was really all three of us just reacting to what the fuck.
Yeah. Usually when it comes to something I'm a part of myself, I'm like an emotional wall, but that was very affecting. Yeah. It was very good.
It's very flattering to hear you say that.
Oh, are you blushing again?
Yeah.
Aww, look at that blush.
No, I was going to lean on you, and then you started pinching my cheek.
You had to ruin the moment, Annie. God damn it.
Wait, hold the fucking phone. Huh? So in real life, you two are together. And, you know, in game life, Zealous and, like, and Lorelai are together. Am I the only single Pringle in every, like, form? I'm a single Pringle in real life and in game!
No, you're not. You're a Nito Dorito.
No, and you should Pringle. And Tootsie and me both don't know if we're ready to mingle.
Hey, guys, I'm single and I don't really know if I want to mingle. I'm
here later. Grey Squirrel, save me.
Well, with that, we're going to get into our little mini session.
Yay!
For those of you listening at home, listening to Chapter 5, you might have been wondering, where the hell is Onyx?
Well, yes.
You're about to find out.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, meow.